Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. In the studio today, as well as the two regular cohorts, which are Julian and Ben.
Hey there.
Hey, Armand.
We have people who've listened to the program. We have an audience on air, and this is as we've promised. We have three people who have written into us in response to some of what we've talked about, who have decided to help us with our doing today's program. And today's we're doing a program about how we present ourselves. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls as well. So we have a question, and the question starts with Julian. Julian was saying to me the other day, as Julian and I hang out with each other, Julian was saying to me the other day, as I was watching a movie called Marco Polo, and I was watching the barbarians come rushing at the screen with spears that they were throwing, as if you could actually feel them coming through this screen at you. And as it's coming at me, what did you see? Tell them what you told me.
Well, I said, coming from an acting background, I look at the TV, and you see the castles and the barbarians, and I see on the left, I see the intern running by with coffee. On the top of the TV, I see the microphone. On the right side, I see the director's chair, and behind that is all the tents and all the crafty services and everything you can imagine. I mean, it's this controlled square in front of you, and everything around it is what they don't want you to see.
So here I am seeing the spears being thrown at me, but there's somebody who's sitting behind me who's actually directing this whole thing. They're watching the whole show. So the show goes on, and we feel we're involved. But it's being directed. There's a whole subtext. Luckily, I have with me a number of actors, right? I've got Elizabeth, who is an actor. And I've got Rena, who has done acting and is also a hairstylist. She helps people fix their styles. And then there's the remarkable Anna. Anna, what's your last name?
Cianciulli.
Yeah, Cianciulli, which is beautifully Italian.
Yes.
Spelt in an Italian way. She's from Florence.
Yes.
But Anna's created some film products that I've seen that are just remarkable. They're about to be released. But they're with me because these are women who understand, and I have questions. My first question is, what is it that you, when you meet somebody, what is it that you want them to see? In their square boxes, Julian describes it. They see you coming at them. What do you want them to see? What is it that you want?
Well, I want them to see that I am not a threat. And I want them to see that I am not needy of anything. I mean, at this point of my life, I can only talk about this point of my life, or that I'm not looking for safety or for someone to complete me. That I pretty much, you know, have a pretty good relationship with myself. And if I can hang out with someone and not get bored and have a good time, then I'm
okay,
open
now,
to that.
So the image you want to project is that you don't need anything, that you're strong, that you're independent. That's the image, right? Okay, I'm going to go with that. That's what you want them to see, that you're not needy and you're not... You don't want them to see that. Okay, what about you, Elizabeth? What's your image?
Of myself?
Yeah, that you present.
Friendly.
Friendly,
that I'm approachable, that somebody can... that I'm welcoming... That I know that I would be smiling and be genuinely happy to meet a new person.
So welcoming is important.
Welcoming.
Invitational
yeah.
is big for you.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas what Anna is saying more than that is she's saying, I'm also a safe, I don't need from you, because you got to watch out. There are people that need from you. There are people going to run away from that. What would you say, Rita? What would you say the first presentation of you shows?
I would say that I show also friendliness and being really welcoming to someone and open. Yeah, that's kind of it, really. Like, more than anything, just be open to whoever I meet.
Open. Okay. Now, Ben, in your life, and you say you're meeting people for the first time, do you imagine that you also are presenting a similar kind of thing? I'm safe?
Sure. I try to be safe and open and friendly. I also try to be funny, and I also try to connect with people on a humorous level.
So funny is important. You want to say to them, we could play together.
Absolutely.
So you're inviting people into a playground.
Like, not only am I safe to talk to, but I'm safe to joke with.
All right. All right. Got it. I'm willing to say, of course, that all of these are a fraud. All of this is a lie. You're not safe to joke with, Ben. Are you kidding? You welcome yourself into Ben's den. He is very likely to gobble you up. Right, Ben? True.
It could happen.
It could happen. But you're going to put out the invitation.
Sure.
Let me give you the invitation into my den where you'll laugh and you'll feel like a child with me. And then I'm going to take a closer look at you and I'm going to see how you work with me. And if I like what you've got, I'm going to try to, you know, part the expression, milk the cow. I want to get some of the beauty out of this. And enjoy it until I'm done enjoying it. And then with a joke, somehow I'm going to show you where the door is. Perfect. Now, in your invitation of welcoming people in, do you ever see yourself inviting somebody in at a level where you're just, it's just an invitation, even though they think it's a wonderful invitation to play, you know your door is shut.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's, come on, Elizabeth, you're tough. Anna, you're tough. You're somebody who knows darn well.
Yes.
That they're getting in only certain so far, and then boom. If they don't pass muster, you're going to kick them right out, right?
Yes. I mean, I guess the whole point of being together with somebody is to have a nice, pleasant time. What I tend to have a little bit of a problem at this point of my life is all of this idea of labeling everything. You know, everybody's needs. Let's talk about what we are. You know, so I'm more into let thing. You know, how does the thing manifest themselves? I think we get in a lot of trouble. When
okay, wait. Before we get to the we,
yes.
Let's stick with the I. I can deal with that a lot more.
Yes. That okay. I. Yes, definitely. We, in terms of the relationship.
No, but in the I part of it, yes. I, Anna, powerful Anna, who is a very strong person, who doesn't depend on anybody, who is a film producer, who is from Florence, and if you want to get anywhere near me, you better be okay, because I'm going to invite you into a world where we could be adults together.
Okay, but I don't want to give the impression that I don't need love, affection, and care. I do.
Okay,
need love.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me ask you a question here.
Yes.
If at the beginning you're meeting somebody for the first time and you're saying to them, I am independent, I don't have any needs, then it's not true. Have needs.
Yes. It's not something that I really say. You know, it's something that you're carrying within you.
Yeah, I
So
understand.
If you are in a certain harmony with
Who's
yourself.
You now?
If I am in a certain...
I'm going to stick with anything you say that I am going to listen to.
Please, yes. If I am into a certain harmony inside of me, if I'm connected to life in a certain way, then I think that will be transmitted. So I'm not into, like, let's talk
Fantastic.
About who I am.
Fantastic.
No.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI. We're talking about relationships and we're talking about how we connect. So you talk about the illusion that you put out there. You know what I love about what you do, Rena? I love the fact that you do hair. And you help people with their hair do a presentation. Can you tell me about the different presentations that people want with their hair? I mean, how do they like their hair to be? Do they want to look tough? Do they want to look soft? Do they want to look, they want extensions? Why do people want extensions? I'm curious.
Well, usually people that want extensions is so that they can have long hair, and that's usually ladies, women. I don't actually work with extensions. I help them to, I create something on their hair, around their hair, face, where they look good and feel good. I color their hair as well. I also help women embrace their white hairs. I don't believe in dyeing all the hair. So I get a lot of women that sort of want to break that mold of that sort of all over color thing. And also,
okay, I'm trying to ask you, that's good, thank you. So what you're saying to me is you help people embrace themselves as your style, but what people want is they want the hair to present a word, a message to somebody. What? I'm neat, I'm sexy, I'm what? What do people want to be? How do they want to see themselves?
Well, all of the above. Most people want to look sexy, look good, look glamorous, and fuse it all together.
And
really,
you put that all together in your hairstyling.
I do the best I can to, yes. And
your hair is beautiful, by the way. I love what you've done with your hair. You should all be sitting with us, right? Look at what she's done. She's got little speckles of colors in different places. It's great.
Thank you.
You have to do mine.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, get mine later and it will look just like yours. I'll be very happy.
Absolutely, yes.
I'll go for it. Well, you too? We got Julian as well.
I'm next.
He's next. Okay. So now you mentioned something that is very interesting to me, or I mentioned something interesting. And Elizabeth, I want to bring this to you too. You left out of the initial presentation sex. You don't present, hey, I'm hot, and you could have me if you do the right thing. You don't put that out there, right?
Not particularly.
You don't believe that that's what you're putting out there, right? You don't believe that's your message. Your message is, look at me, Mr. or Mrs., whoever you're attracted to. Look at me, and you can see all kinds of characteristics, but I want you to know that somewhere inside here is a hot person that you could have if you play your cards right. Do you think you put that message out?
No, I think I like to present myself in a way that I feel good with myself. So, you know, when I dress and when I put something on, it's not particularly, you know, targeted at attracting the male. I want to feel good with myself, and that, if that attracts somebody, that's good. But maybe, you know, you're right. Maybe there is a subconscious, you know.
Is there that subtext? What do you think, Elizabeth? Do you think you have a subtext? I mean, what you do doesn't really matter, but you think your subtext is, I'm hot.
No,
I could be had.
No, I'm not putting myself forward to sell myself.
No, that's a judgment. I don't mean to sell yourself, but look, let me talk about nature. Nature designed us to go out there and sell ourselves for sex. Every species looks sexy. It's saying, please do me, right? It says, I want to be done. Females want to be done. Males say, I got to do you, because this is what nature decided.
Absolutely. I think on a very basic level, even male and female, we all have a desire to be desired and desirable.
Right. So this is part of what nature says, because in order to keep the species going, we have to have everybody doing everybody, like bonobos. But since we've gotten to be very cultured, certain people like Elizabeth say, oh, no, look, I want to play, I want to have fun, but don't look at me that way. Other people like Anna say, well, you can look at me that way, but don't mention it. Right? This is not what we're going to do on top. But basically what you're also telling me, Rena, is with hairstyles, even with hairstyles, women are saying, come get me, I'm attractive, I'm loose, I have these loose, my hair tells you I'm available.
Well, I don't know about the loose bit, though, Armand. I don't, I mean, the people I know don't strike me in that way, honestly. But
I don't mean loose meaning that they're going to have sex with just about anybody, meaning my hair is loose.
Yes, definitely. I mean, the important thing is that they feel good with how
I've created their hair for them more than anything. Okay. Good and confident.
Well, let me ask sexy Julian. Julian, here's Julian, 22 years old. Hey, Julian, do you think you put yourself out there as a sex object? Truthfully now, do you?
No.
No?
No, I don't think so.
No, you don't.
I think I try to project and I try to project myself, which I think definitely mixture of humor with some kind of, I guess you could call it charm. Some people call it charm. Some people call it something else. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm trying to be a sex object, no.
Right. And I didn't mean a sex object, but it isn't sex that you sell. And the reason it isn't sex you sell, because sex is not your highest priority. You have other priorities that matter more to you in a relationship.
Absolutely.
Okay? Nature may have designed you the other way. You may have been a horny little kid, right? But at this point in your life, even at 22, you're saying, no, I'm a man who wants to meet somebody. And if I meet somebody, sure, all that is potential. But that's not what I'm selling.
It's true. It's not the first priority.
So nobody sells it as their first priority here in the room. A lot of people out there do sell it as their first priority. But there is somewhere on the other side of it, there's somebody who's considering that priority with you. So now I'm going to bring it to you. I want to ask you women. So when you're with somebody who you think you meet somebody for the first time, and the guy is interested in you physically primarily, how do you deal with that?
If you have a sense that that's not all he's interested in, if I have a sense that he's only that's what he's interested in, it's just sex. I don't know. You catch me, you know. I guess if I am in the same kind of mood, meaning, okay, it's a mutual understanding that we are into this for sex, then possibly, but that's not definitely my main objective.
Right, so that's not necessarily okay. Now, what if, let's try it on your side for a moment. What if you know for sure this is not your highest priority, you know, and that that's a person's primary interest? What do you do at that point?
I would try to, if I've detected that perhaps the person I'm with is only wanting to, you know, get my clothes off or something, it really,
well,
I find
let me
it
change
a turn
that.
Off.
Not only wanting to get your clothing off, but wants to get your clothing off as part of getting to know you, and it's a high priority.
Well, I mean, part of it is flattering, but part of it would make me kind of wary as well. Because I don't want to be looked at like a piece of meat. I don't want to be looked at like I can fulfill somebody else's, that I'm just there to fulfill somebody else's desire of me.
That's very important. So in other words, one of the things that happen when you become an object of sex is you're no longer in existence. You're just there to render the other person's desire satisfied. So you lose your personality. What an interesting thing. Of course that's why it's, so they say it's kind of dehumanizing. Of course. Of course that's why it doesn't feel as good. Now for some people, some men I know and some women I know, at least they feel of some value. You know, like, okay, at least there's something I could do for you. You're, sure, let me give you sex. That means at least I have some value. But it's very interesting what you say. You don't want to be seen as somebody who's just there for the service of the other person. You know, it's like being married to a man who is a narcissist. it's an inside joke. You know, you ever get around somebody who's always, it's all about them, right? It's only about them, it's only about them, it's only about them, it's not about anybody else, right? It's very tough. Very tough to be with them unless you have, but if you don't have a personality, it's not so tough. If you have no personality at all, it's not so tough. Because then if you have a personality to give up, you know, if you have somebody who's willing to give themselves over, have you met people, men, women, who are willing to turn themselves over to you so quickly because they have no personality whatsoever? Right? Without being critical of them. Tell me about that. Tell me about it, Ben.
I think there's a strong desire, like I said, in everyone to be liked and to be accepted. And I think that some people...
Could you keep it on you?
Yeah. So for my experience, I have met people who wanted to be liked and accepted so badly, both men and women, and both on a platonic level and a romantic sexual level. I've met people that had such a need to feel that acceptance and that love that they were willing to either modify their personality or suppress parts of their personality to kind of go along with a group or myself as an individual or what have you.
And that for some people, sex is their total personality because they got no other personality.
It's
all they've developed.
It's
here
their
it is.
Biggest bargaining chip in
here
a way.
Here it is. And I imagine in nature there are things just like that. In nature, there's, you know, there's the bee that, you know, drops its honey, and that's its job. You know, what drops its honey? No.
The stinger.
No, it drops its, wait, no, wait. Who is it that pollinates the flowers? The bees do.
The bumblebee.
Right, the bumblebee. You were going to say, Julian?
Well, yeah, I was just going to talk, actually, myself, personally, I found myself, rather than sex being my first priority, often it's to be liked. So I find myself often changing certain parts of my personality, hiding certain parts of my personality, creating parts of my personality for a woman that I'm interested in so that she likes me. And it eventually I do that and that becomes part of my personality. And it's kind of amazing watching it sometimes afterwards. I see how much I've changed in a 6-month relationship because a girl is much more interested in the classy side of me or expects something from me that I don't normally have. And I heard that when Ben was talking about that, and he sees that there's this sort of thing where you change yourself.
Elizabeth, what were you going to say about that? I saw you in...
I was sort of nodding in agreement a little bit.
Because
yeah.
You see yourself doing that?
Yeah, I do. And I guess sometimes I haven't been in a relationship for a long time. And maybe I'm sort of keeping myself back a little bit. I could recognize myself in what you were describing, Julian, and how maybe standing on the sidelines observing and then not wanting to reveal too much because maybe there's a little danger there if you reveal a little too much.
What
then
do you mean?
Become
what
vulnerable.
Do you mean? Okay, you become vulnerable to what?
To the other person.
To the other person's what?
To their idea of you.
Oh, let's slow it down just a little bit, okay? So if you show me this side of you, you become vulnerable to me, but vulnerable to me means you become disempowered, that you lose your will. And as you lose your will, therefore, I must be able to take some kind of advantage of you. And that's where the danger lies, because certainly you want to be vulnerable with certain people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where you don't have that danger, but there's a guard that you naturally put up there. You've been burned. Now, Elizabeth, you've been in some serious stuff where you've gotten whacked,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you said, I'm
so
not
I'm cautious.
Go. I'm not going there again, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, you said something a little to me before, Anna. You said, I'm not going to depend on anybody. I don't have any needs of you. Because that's the killer part. The part is when you need somebody,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
What about it?
Well, you know, needy. When you become needy, when I become, or I meet a partner that is needy.
No, what about when you're needy?
When I'm needy.
Yeah.
Okay. So. No, wait, I have to ask, what do I need?
Yeah, can I ask you that question?
Yes.
Because I know me.
Yes.
And I know when I become needy, when I become like I feel like I'm just a little deficient and I want something coming in my direction, and boy, I could feel that. I'm just looking for it, you know?
Yeah,
you
but,
feel that sometimes,
yeah.
don't you? Don't
yes,
you feel like,
yes.
oh boy, if just it would come along, I would love to have it.
Yes.
So we become that kind of needy.
Yes.
When you feel that way,
yes.
you're really vulnerable, right? But you
yes.
don't want the other person to see it.
Not particularly, no.
Not at all.
Not at all. No, I don't. But that becomes a dialogue with myself. I have to engage a dialogue with myself.
Hmm.
I have to ask myself whether I like to feel this and how do I change that.
Because it's dangerous. Because, to you. You'd rather give it up.
No, I just, you know, it's dangerous. I mean, it's it occupies your mind.
Who's
your
mind?
Time, my mind, my time. And I you know,
you've become
I
obsessed
want
with it. You become in that involved all the way, involved in a deep relationship, right?
Yes.
And you become obsessed with it. It just is taken over. And you let it take you over or not?
Yes.
No, I'm not going to do it this time. I've done this before. I'm not going to feel this.
Well, exactly.
As I've been as here. I know exactly. As I grew up, the same thing in childhood you had it?
No, but as I grew up, I this is a decision, I made at 18.
18? Why so 18. Early?
Well, because I had the three relationships which were very painful, and at that time I remember thinking, I cannot, a man can come into my life and can leave me, can abandon me, can betray me, can die, and I have all of this passion, so I need to find something that nobody can take away from me.
Now, wait, but at 18 you had a man come into your life who
three.
Died?
Three, I had already three. No,
the guys
didn't
who died?
Die.
What were you doing to them?
No. nobody died.
Okay.
But they hurt me.
They hurt you.
And
okay.
I mean, the whole idea of making
they left you. They did
yes,
things.
They betrayed,
me. Okay, let me ask you a question before that. Okay,
yes.
That happened at age 18, but it usually happens at age 18 to women who are vulnerable, who do have strong needs.
Yes.
So before then,
yes.
Did you feel really confident with your family, or did you feel?
Oh, no. I mean, there was a lot. There were problems, of course. Yeah.
And therefore, there's this vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
Vacuum with a father who you can't depend on.
Mm.
So you look and say, give me a replacement for my daddy. And these guys come along, one each, and they say, here, I'll be your daddy. Here, I'll be your daddy. Here, I'll be your daddy. And then you find out, you say, oh, no. Mm-hmm. I'm not going through that ever again. No more daddies, right?
Yes, or sons.
Yeah.
Daddies or sons, because there's a lot of sons in my life, too.
Means sons, meaning the boys.
No, meaning men that they relate to me as son.
As
and
a mother.
As sons, and I relate to them as a mother.
Yeah, beautiful. So having that early childhood family insecurity leads us to discovering some part of ourselves and trying to recover some part of ourselves in relationships. But then we touch on that part of ourselves that is so painful. The need from being a child in a family where what was available to you was not available. Let me ask you something, Rena. Was the family missing the amount of love you needed? Did you get all you needed, or was there a big missing piece?
No, didn't get any at all.
That's
actually.
It, of course.
None. Didn't know my dad.
Didn't even know him.
Met him twice when I was 7.
So every relationship you went on, you didn't have this idea of what it's like to have somebody who loved you like that.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
But I was always open to everybody, though, that I went out met. Always. Only in the last several years, I've learnt to not be that person, to let all these damaged people into my life who couldn't give me love or anything.
So you would
positive.
Take damaged people because damaged people were more likely to provide you with some attachment. Right? A damaged person, like an alcohol addict or something like that, they're likely to be there for you 100% because they need you and they depend on you. And they felt safe. They're not like a daddy who you only met twice. But then it turns out that they're not there at all.
Not at all.
Not at all.
No, not at all.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
No, I've never known anyone positive.
You're beautiful. You're beautiful. Wow, what brave people these are. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're doing some potent stuff here, and I have the graces of these three wonderful people who are guests, who has listened to the program. How many years have you heard the program, Hannah?
I have listened almost to your archive completely.
Everything in the archive? Wow.
Maybe 90% for sure.
Really?
Yeah.
And so you've been listening to the program for
yes, because I've came across your program just maybe 4 years ago, so there was a lot of
and
years
then you
before.
Went to the archives. What a nice thing. How long have you been listening to the program?
Well, not quite as long as Anna, actually. Like maybe, I don't know, I'm kind of newish to WBO. Maybe like a couple of 2 years or so. Is something like that. Uh-huh. I love your show. And yeah.
What about you, Elizabeth?
Yeah, I've been listening for about 4 years. Yeah.
One way. Mm-hmm. Hey, listen, we're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, we will eventually be getting to some calls, but you guys are just so beautiful. I want to thank you so much. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Understand the reason why we care.
here with you at the Positive Mind. That's Karen Carpenter and the Carpenters. Masquerade, Leon Russell. Beautiful, beautiful music. No? The Carpenters. They didn't write Masquerade. No. I don't think he was hearing what I was saying. Eh? Leon Russell, I think, wrote Masquerade. Karen Carpenter was singing the Carpenter. Thank you very much. Julian Joiello, who's my cousin, and Ben Starr. In our audience, Rena, who is a hairstylist, knowledgeable, good fan of WBAI, has come here from England and in America, and she's a beautiful human being. And also with us is Elizabeth, who is an actor, and she's a terrific old friend. She's been with us. She's helped us with our fund drives at WBAI. And Anna, the film director from Florence, who is doing some amazing stuff about to be released. Beautiful person also, giving us their truth. The truth about what it's like to be a human in this world. Now, in our break, Ben and Elizabeth both had, you know, we said, well, we should take our calls because our phones have been ringing off the hook, but we're not going to take them yet. And Ben said that Ben had an idea, but we should explore this a little further because we should look at this and about the images we put on in different places. And Elizabeth jumped in and she had an idea around that too. So I said, well, why don't you, Elizabeth and Ben, take this part and direct it, and the rest of us will be your group. Go ahead, Elizabeth. Why don't you start? What are your questions?
Well, what I was thinking of when Ben was talking was that how we present ourselves, we learn that possibly from a very, very young age. I know personally, I'm from my family. I have two sisters and I'm the middle. So I'm one of three girls. And I can safely say that all three of us are very different personalities and we present ourselves in different ways. And our responsibilities within our family are very different. Our parents expect different things from us. And therefore, we learn to expect different things from ourselves. I'm the caretaker, so I take care of everybody and I'm the go-between. So that's what I expect from myself, and that's my sort of responsibility in my family, and that's how I present myself.
Is that the way you present yourself to people, too, in relationships? Are you?
Yes, I think I do. I think I would present that I've got your back. I'll take care of this. I'm in control. I've got responsibility here. I'll take responsibility.
Growing up in your family, there was a dynamic that was established, and you came into this role of caretaker.
Mm-hmm.
What about your other sisters? What were their roles?
Not caretaker, because they were being taken care of by me.
Well, what about your youngest sister, for example? What was her role?
Well, to be the youngest, to be the baby of the family, quite genuinely, everybody would take care of her. They would be able to exercise their, ability to nurture or practice nurturing, and she would receive.
And why did that role fall on you and not your oldest sister?
Well, it's funny. My older sister has always said, it's always like you're the eldest. She's always said, it's as if you should be the eldest, not me. I don't know. She was a bit wild.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking earlier in the program about the sort of the image that we give to others in interpersonal relationships. Mm-hmm. But there's also, as Elizabeth said, there's the images that we present within our family. And also, of course, to our friends.
Well, what about you, Ben? What about your images?
Yeah, I think going back to what we discussed earlier, I think I have a tendency to portray an image of a sort of a joker, of a sort of a wild guy, fun-loving, and sort of on the edge.
Wait a minute now. I'm going to take you to that. It's not the way you presented yourself to me.
Maybe not, but, you know.
So wait. So how does that differ than the way that you present yourself naturally? Because with me, you had a different thing and idea. You know, when we were talking about working together,
right?
You presented yourself differently. So you're saying in different venues.
Exactly. If I'm going to discuss with someone who I want to work with or work for, I'm not going to portray myself as sort of a joker wise guy.
Unless you met somebody who was a joker wise guy and you figured that it would fly.
Right.
So if it would work, it would work. But you didn't meet that. You met somebody who's fairly serious, right? Even though lighthearted. And that's the part of you you brought out. Therefore, it brings the question that you're bringing out. Does it mean that we have in ourselves a sensor that senses what the other person needs in our personality?
I think 100% we do. And I think that all of us have multifaceted personalities. I think, Elizabeth, you may be a caretaker, but there's also likely a part of you that wants to be taken care of. And it doesn't mean that because you've assumed a role of caretaker in your family that you'll want to play that role in a, maybe an interpersonal relationship or with a friend. Maybe that became your family role. What about...
I like Elizabeth, I've always been a caretaker. And you know, I learned from Armand on his series, The Drama of the Gifted Child, how the mechanism of when you're a child, when you, what you learn about how you go about getting love, right? And so I guess for a long time I was unconscious of the fact that my way of getting love was to take care of people, to play the mother, because this is probably what I did when I was younger. I was an adult as a little girl, and so therefore that was my, you know, I thought that that was the way to get love, you know, if I care for people, you know, then they will love me. But as I grow up, I realize that giving, I believe that giving doesn't reinforce only who receives. It also gives a lot of strength to the giver. So I am, you know, there's something beautiful in giving to somebody. And
you love when you give.
Yes,
that's good.
Yeah,
that's good. I like that.
Question for you, Armand. I was mentioning before when we have all these facets of our personality that kind of come out between different environments and different people and what we want to show, does that represent your actual personality, or is it just something we're creating?
That's a great question. The actual personality, that's a good question. Most people present their non-self, right? Because we were brought up, we learned at an early age that whatever self we have, it's the non-self that gets the food. It's the non-self that gets the approval. So mostly what we're going to do is bring our non-self. But now what happens after a while, unfortunately, you get married and you take your non-self and you say, well, you know, I don't have to be that non-self today, so maybe I won't take a bath. So I don't have to be that non-self. Maybe I won't provide the food. And little by little, your non-self disappears and what is left over may not be palatable to your mate. It happens very frequently. So the question becomes, are you really allowed to abandon your non-self? Or maybe you want to hold on to it. Maybe you want to identify your non-self. Like you, Julian, you know, your non-self is a giving self. You are a giving man. One would say, hey, Julian should give less. I don't know how you do with giving less.
I don't feel comfortable that way.
I know you don't feel comfortable, but for all I know, it may not be even possible to give less. You know, Ben, you're a private guy. So people would say, oh, Ben, don't be so private. Well, I don't know. I don't know what would happen. I don't know what would happen. So, Rena, if you were to give up your... Well, what's the self of you that you think is the most... common side for you to present that is not real? What's your least real self that you present?
I don't really know, to be honest.
Okay, how about funny? Are you funny?
Sometimes, yeah.
Okay, all right. Are you confused?
A lot of times.
A lot of times you're confused, right? So you like to present yourself as being somebody who's confused and people feel fun toward you, right?
I guess so.
Okay, now, Rena, can you spot a phony when you see him?
A phony?
Yeah, phony, yeah.
I think I can.
But you're not sure, right?
Not entirely.
So confusion is like a part of your life.
Yeah, I guess so.
Not sure of anything.
Wow, really?
Yeah, not sure of anything, right?
I suppose.
That's beautiful. It's okay not to be sure. This way you can see the many sides of things. So mm-hmm. one of the things I see about Rena, if I meet with Rena, is that if you ask her a question, I'm not sure. Well, that's beautiful because the people who are sure worry me. She's unsure about everything, and the people who are sure about everything, they really bother me. What about you, Elizabeth?
It's funny. I was just thinking about that. I think I can spot a phony. And I kind of try and pull away. But I also, what you were just asking, what were you just asking? I think what I would like somebody to see for me, which is, it doesn't happen very often because I don't get angry very often, but if I was going to be in a relationship with somebody, I'd want them to see me really be really angry so that they could know.
Oh, man, are you talking about something important? Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I knew a man who loved a woman, and this woman was loved by everyone. She had the biggest smile, and she was just everybody loved her. Everybody thought she was wonderful, and nobody knew that when she was in her private relationship with her boyfriend, she was rageful. Rage. I mean, rageful to the point where she threw things, smashed things, hit him, that she would get to this edge. But nobody knew this. So one day he, her fiancé, told her children. He said, boy, your mom really gets angry. And they say, oh, no, my mother never gets angry. They watched her mother growing up. They knew their mother for 20-some-odd years, and none of them had ever seen her get angry. Nobody had ever seen her get angry. She held that for the sanctity of a relationship that she had, and then he saw it. Now, the minute he saw that she was capable of this anger and acknowledged it and saw it and said, I see this is part of you, she had to get rid of him because she wanted to keep this secret. So what you're saying is, there's a part of me, Elizabeth, that gets really pissed off. I get really angry.
I don't get rageful and throw things. No, I don't do that.
But maybe possibly you even could. You could get so outraged. If your ex-husband came in your house right now and did something that would be so far out of field, you might. What if you were defending your child?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I would. Absolutely. Oh,
right? Could you kill for your son?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yes. Oh, gosh, yes. But of course you could. So that's mm-hmm. part of you.
Yeah, would I mean, you? I don't. I mean, yes, I absolutely could do that. I wouldn't, but I'm not living in a state of rage. I'm just. I think a lot of the times, though, in our society, we're kind of expected to suppress everything. And when we have to, you know, get to know somebody, we've got everything's got to be daisies and sunshine and
yeah. And for the dark sides of you, you sometimes, do you ever get depressed?
I have
moody, right?
I have some gray days.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's natural. I think it's natural in the cycle of life.
It would be natural in your cycle of life, except you're such a cheerful person that whoever meets you would be surprised by your gray days.
Yeah, I think that's what I was thinking.
And you want them to know, I got gray days.
Yeah. Just like I am totally open to a person. I don't want, we were talking about phony. I don't want somebody to pretend that everything's fabulous all the time because I want to be able to be there for somebody who is having a gray day.
Right.
Add a little sunshine, just like I would like to receive that as well. Yeah.
Let me ask you, Anna.
Yes.
So in your world,
yes.
In your world, what people see about you is how independent you are and how strong you are, but are they allowed to see how needy you are? Mm. Are they allowed to see the fact that you have needs as well?
Are they allowed? Of course. I mean, they.
I mean, if someone you loved, if someone yes. loved you,
yes,
what piece of you could they see that you might not show to other people? Show me
my the child.
The child. What about the child?
Well, the child is the innocence, and the child has a joy for living. You know, he wakes up in the morning and it. Is just excited about life, and I think that there is that part in me, you know. I never mean to come across like a person who doesn't need
So the,
another, you know.
So
to be
the
there.
Adult part of you, the strong part of you, prevents people, stops people from seeing that underneath all of this, there's a part of us that's little. Ben was talking about it when he talked about joking with people. He invites the child out to play. You say, no, 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 my child is only going to come out to play when I know I'm really safe.
Yes.
And it doesn't come out very often.
It does, but not very often. No. But there are situations when I feel comfortable, when I, even with my classes, you know,
right,
I feel that there is a reciprocal love, then there is a, you know, everything comes out.
How about in a romantic relationship? Has it had a chance to manifest in a romantic relationship for any period of time? Because here's what I'm going to be willing to bet. I'm willing to bet that when finally the child comes out, that's when you leave. I'm willing to bet that when this piece of us that we keep hidden so hard finally comes out, like that lady I was talking about who was angry, when finally we got somebody who sees it, even if we have somebody who accepts it, we run away.
I usually don't leave.
You never leave.
I don't abandon. I don't abandon, no.
Abandon's a big word. You don't leave. Usually somebody leaves you.
Yes, and then usually they also come back later. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting thing.
And they've realized the error of their ways.
Exactly. Realize the error of their ways and they come back later.
Right? It's a nice, interesting thing, you know.
But they don't die.
They don't die, no.
I understand. This is Armand DeMille with you with a couple of people here. It's quite interesting, Ben.
You know, there's something that Elizabeth said that really resonated with me about having gray days and how that's sort of a normal part of life. And it reminded me of something that somebody told me a long time ago about life and emotions being like a pendulum and how the contrast of emotion was important, like a pendulum swinging from one side to another. We feel our emotions to the extent that we feel the other side. So to know happiness, you also have to know, in a way, the other side of that, like the sort of the juxtaposition of light and dark. You can't have one without the other. And I think that's very interesting.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. I think we all have we all have to go through the fire sometimes.
What is what's the message we got from Terrence McKenna?
That nothing is permanent.
Let's talk about this, yeah. Okay? Terrence is an old buddy of mine and Ben's. Right? The other day we were sitting around and we were talking about Terrence and we were talking about with Terrence, who's now dead, who's in Hawaii. And he said there was something he wrote that caught Ben's eye. Now, Ben's in his 20s and I'm later than that. I'm older than that. So Ben learned this lesson that I remember so vividly that applies to what we're saying.
He said nothing's permanent and nothing lasts, not your fortune or your misfortune. And it's simultaneously cause for exaltation, and it's cause for despair.
Mm-hmm. Should I say it again even slower? Nothing
lasts, not your fortune or your misfortune.
So neither your good stuff lasts or your bad stuff lasts. So when you see a kid who's crying in pain and saying, oh, my teacher just took give me a bad mark, it doesn't last. And you know that as a parent. You say to your kid, but you don't say to your kid, you're going to get over it, it's going to pass. But you know it's going to pass. And that's what helps the child, you knowing it's going to pass. But neither does the child's good fortune last. So when the child comes to you and says, I just am the best teacher, you know it's short-lived. But you don't tell your kid, you're going to be over that in a minute. Wisdom. Nothing lasts, neither good fortune or misfortune. What's the second part of it, Ben?
That it's cause for exaltation and cause for despair.
That because of this, you could either be all the way up there or you could be either depressed. And the truth is, it's really cause for neither.
Right.
Right? Because neither the exaltation would last.
It's a very liberating thing to realize that everything is fleeting. And,
yeah.
You know, it forces us to live in the now and appreciate every precious moment.
Well, the other beauty of what you're saying, which Terrence didn't take it, is since because everything is exaltation or despair, but even the despair won't last.
Exactly.
Or the exaltation won't last. This is Armand DeMille with Ben Starr and Julian Joiello and our guests, Rena, Anna, Elizabeth, thank you so much for today.
Oh,
thank
you.
Thank you.
A little
thank
Christmas you. Wish for people on the air. I hope people, if you want it, I know I didn't take any of your calls. We're going to be doing more of this tomorrow. Send me an email, armand@thepositivemind.com. I'd like to hear from you. I'd like to hear from you about the show, and we'll try to include it tomorrow in what we do, right?
Absolutely.
Bye-bye for now.